Welcome back on this Wednesday evening already, middle of the week, last week of February, only 28 days this month. We are going to spend the next 2 hours with Admiral Harry Cooper, who is back tonight to talk about not only his magnificent historical revelation books, but his upcoming tours, which you are invited to join. Go along and experience history. And if you haven't gone on these, and certainly an uncountably large percentage of you haven't, you might want to think about it. It may be one of your last chances to go to a reasonably accessible Europe under the control and protection and guidance of an extraordinary man, Harry Cooper, and his organization, Shark Hunters. You might want to take that opportunity before it's no longer available. Let's go down to Florida and find out how the man is. How are you?
I'm a lot better than I was a couple of weeks ago, thanks. No more flu here.
That was bad stuff. Huh? Everybody I know who's had it literally is down for a week, some of them. Longer, some of them.
Well, I was lucky. I was only down for about 2 days, but it just was not a lot of fun.
No. Not good. Go to the left-hand side at rents.com. Look for guests there in our little radio section. Look for Harry Cooper and click on the link under Harry's name to load up the pictures for tonight's tour. Where are we going to go tonight?
Well, we're going to look at some of the new books we've got and also preview our European tour, the Southern Redoubt Patrol, as we call it, because the Allies thought the leaders of the Third Reich were going to make a last-ditch stand down in Bavaria and northern Austria. Mm-hmm. And they were wrong. A few of them were down there, but Goering was about the only high-ranking guy down there. Bormann was up in Berlin. Hitler was in Berlin until he left before the door shut. Dönitz was up in Berlin. Goering was the only guy down there, and he wound up on the wrong side of a cyanide cap.
Yes, well, I think they smuggled that into him, didn't they?
That's what I've been told. That's what everybody thinks.
Well, he was incarcerated for the Nuremberg trials.
Exactly. The American guard allegedly brought it to him. No proof, but that's just what they figure, because he's the only one that had access to just about every place Goering had gone.
Right. It's all an amazing story. And for those of you who are new to the program, you have a chance to find out the truth about World War II and what really happened after the war, and it is a stunning story. And when Harry goes on these tours, calls them patrols, he takes a group of 10, 15, 20 people, and they get to walk through history, the likes of which no other organization has ever made available to people. It's and time's a-wasting, so don't, if you're thinking about it, now's the time to do it. And we're going to go through some pictures and talk in more detail about that. But because this is my program, and because you like the old great music as much as I do, and because we never get to hear good music anymore, I'm going to play a nice piece of music. It's only 2 minutes and 53 seconds long, but the old songs were the great songs. And I think a lot of you listening might get a little bit of enjoyment from this. I hope so. Here we go.
Once in a while, will you try to give one little thought to me? Though someone else may be nearer your heart. Once in a while, will you dream of the moment I shared with you?
Now those, they don't write songs like that anymore, and a lot of you might be younger and say, well, I can see why. But those were really timeless melodies, and a lot of them came from the war years, which we're talking about in this program tonight, just to give you an idea of the kind of sentimental songs that used to be sung and, you know, performed. It was very interesting that day, long ago.
That was the Platters, wasn't it?
Yeah, Tony Williams.
You can't miss that voice. What an incredible voice.
He was honest. I don't think there was a better one. I really don't. And I'm not excluding Mario Lanza, who was a class by himself. But Tony Williams, you think about, and I really like Johnny Mathis, Nat King Cole, Tony Bennett, Tony Williams had a more beautiful voice, I think, than all of them. Totally melodic. He could sing it all, and just effortlessly. And the other part of the magic was that he understood the lyrics and how to deliver them.
Yeah.
A lot of singers just sing the words. Tony could live them, and he did. Anyway, thanks for that. Yeah, you're right.
I grew up at a good time. That music was popular in the 50s. I was a teenager in the 50s. It was exactly like American Graffiti. It was exactly like Happy Days. That's the way it was.
Yep.
And for the good old days.
We're much the worse off for it. Now, it's not music anymore. It's just product. It's synthesized, computer-generated, computer-created, digital product. That's all it is.
Yeah. Well, can't turn back the hands of time, I'm afraid.
No, we can listen to it, though, which is kind of fun. All right, now, let's go and look at our pictures. Hope you've all got them loaded up from, again, on the guest list on the left-hand side. And you'll pick up a thumbnail page, and all the photos on that page, just click on them, and you'll see an enlarged version. So let's take the top line. The first one is a cover of, you know, this book's going to be talked about and read probably for as long as there are people who care about World War II, this incredibly terrible last century we went through, because this is the truth. This is an enormous piece of the puzzle revealed in this book, revealed by someone who was there in Berlin, who saw what happened, who finally came forward and told the story, gave it to Harry directly, and it first was in a book over, 22, 23 years ago. And he rewrote the book, brought out a whole lot more information, and the book is called Hitler in Argentina, The Documented Truth of Hitler's Escape from Berlin. No joke for those newcomers out there. This is the real deal.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just finished 4 days at a trade show called the Show of Shows, which is all military.
Oh, yes. Tell me how it went. This is fascinating. I didn't know that.
It was huge. Got to see a lot of Shark Hunters members, signed up a few new ones, met with a couple who had dropped out, and they came back in. But invariably, there'd be somebody on the opposite side of the table from me, and they'll say, do you really think Hitler escaped to Argentina? I tell them, I don't think he escaped. I know he escaped. I don't think you're standing across the table from me. I know you are. There's no question. After you read this book, and I told those people, like I'll tell your listeners, buy the book. Read it all the way through. If you don't like it, send it back. We'll give you back your money. In 20-something years of publishing books, not one book has come back for a refund.
Wow.
So they must, and, you know, we were the first ones out with this story, and it didn't come like some of these other so-called history books about Hitler's escape. This didn't come from me sitting in a library reading somebody else's work. And who was it? David Irving, I think, referred to this type of historian, where a bunch of so-called historians read each other's works and write their own books so that the other guys can read it, and it's kind of circular logic. And, you know, the old story, if in a sled team, if you're not the lead dog, the view never changes. And these people are like the sled dogs. They're just following each other around. This came from Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco, who worked for the Third Reich. He was in the Führer bunker the last 3 months of the war, and part of his duties was every day he had to give a report to Hitler. So he was quite familiar with Hitler, and he personally saw Hitler and Eva Braun forcibly drugged under orders of Martin Bormann and removed from the bunker. Now, we know he was gone by the 23rd of April. The so-called suicide was on the 30th. He was already long gone. From the 23rd onward, all the general orders were signed by Martin Bormann.
Right.
Not by Hitler. That's because Hitler wasn't there. But then Hitler pops up in Argentina, but there's a big gap. We have finally found out where he was in that gap of about 8 to 15 days, and we're coming out with another book about that, and I can't tell you much more about that.
That's fascinating. We might want to rewind and go back to the bunker. He left on the 23rd. The 30th was the day he allegedly committed suicide. There are photos, military photos, I believe taken by the Soviets, who were the ones that overran the bunker. They got in there, and there photos of the couch with blood all over it and so forth, where Hitler supposedly shot himself. Well, somebody apparently did shoot himself or had himself shot sitting on the couch, and it was probably one of Hitler's doubles.
Yeah, we tracked it down. It's a guy named Joseph Silip, S-I-L-I-P, who was a cousin of Hitler, and he was found, discovered by the SS in 1944, brought to Berlin, taught to do everything like Hitler, and he spoke with the same unique Austrian dialect that Hitler did, except he was 1.5 centimeters taller or something like that, but...
Uh-huh.
Incidentally, let me point out that when I mentioned it was found by the SS, there are two different SS groups. Most people don't know that, and say SS to some of the do-gooders and their lips curl up. There was the Allgemeine SS, Schutzstaffel, which means the general, Allgemeine Sturm. Squad. Anyhow, the General Storm Troop, which was the camp guards, and they were under Himmler. The Waffen SS meant Schutzstaffel, the military elite corps. They were the combat soldiers. They were the blue green berets of their day. They were the toughest fighting soldiers of World War II. The Americans who fought against them quickly say that those guys were tough.
Right.
So, anyhow, the SS found this guy, taught him to be like Hitler, and he was one of Hitler's doubles. all the leaders, Churchill, Roosevelt, etc., they all had doubles. It's well known. So, and the people who went rushing into Hitler's chambers after the alleged suicide, two of them claimed they heard the shot. A third one said he just smelled the gunpowder. But their timeline was different. They each said it was at a different hour. Two of them said Hitler was sitting on the couch, mm-hmm. on the sofa, next to Eva Braun, and he had a bullet wound in his right temple, and Eva Braun's dress was wet because allegedly Hitler had knocked over a flower vase. But the third guy said Hitler was seated on a chair facing the sofa, and Eva Braun was lying down on the sofa. How do you make a mistake like that? Either he was sitting on the sofa, yeah. or he was in a chair. She was either sitting there or lying down.
Right.
And they claimed he had a bullet hole in his right temple, which would make sense. He was right-handed. But the photo that they show has a bullet hole right square in the forehead. How do you shoot yourself in the forehead? You just can't turn your hand around with a
No, it's like people who commit suicide and shoot themselves twice in the head with a revolver.
Yeah, well, that happens in Chicago a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's natural death.
Mm-hmm.
Stabbed in the back six times, strangled, thrown down the stairs.
That too.
That's by natural causes in my old hometown. So there's, you know, just so much that we didn't know at the time. Just about everybody believed that he committed suicide. That's what you're taught in school. Your teachers would never lie to you. Well, they don't know they're lying. They're teaching what their course plan tells them.
All of the Western media, in fact, all of the world's media was parroting the same story, so it stuck, of course.
Yeah, except, like I say, I was alive back in those days. I was a kid when the war ended.
When did you figure this out? When did you smell, for the first time, a problem with the official narrative? But long before you got Don Angel's amazing communique,
that's what did it? He mm-hmm. sent me that letter, 114 pages long, single space, typewritten, all about his time with the Third Reich up until, what was it, 1958, I think it was, he finally quit the Reich, and the Reich did not die in May of 45. But I got that, and I thought, this guy's crazy. This guy's nuts. And then one of our members, Captain Bob Thu from the Navy, retired Navy, his whole time in the Navy was Naval Intelligence, and then he went into NSA for a while after, you know, to do a little double dipping. And I asked him if he had ever heard of Don Angel, because he was active spy during the war years himself in the U.S. Navy. And he said, yeah, they had heard of him. They knew who he was, and he was exactly who he said he was. I said, well, this guy's nuts. I said, he sent me a letter and told me that Hitler did not commit suicide in the bunker. And I said, everybody knows he committed suicide in the bunker. And he quietly, just as quietly as if he was asking for another cup of coffee, he said, no, he didn't. We know he got away. I said, what do you mean, we? Who's we? He said, the intelligence community. He said, we knew he got away. So that was my first wake up.
Then Fascinating.
Right. Then I talked to another mm-hmm. spy, a German guy who was spying on behalf of Germany, and he said the same thing. Don Angel was indeed who he said he was. And I asked him, what about Hitler's escape? And, you know, Sergeant Schultz, I see nothing, I hear nothing, I know nothing. He just, this fella didn't want to comment on that. But then as I started digging into it, we found more and more people who saw him down there. A guy who later became a member of Shark Hunters, the Erich Priebke. He was a captain in the SS, the Waffen-SS.
Mm-hmm.
He wound up being one of Hitler's bodyguards down there in San Carlos de Bariloche.
Adinalco.
Adinalco, yeah. Uh-huh. That's mm-hmm. the name of his estate. And Mercedes of Argentina built that place in the closing moments of the war, and allegedly it was rest and recreation for the executives of Mercedes down there, but they never used it. Nobody used it until Hitler and Eva Braun moved in 1945, and then after they moved out in 1955, when Juan Perón got knocked out of office and their protection was gone, they took off just like all the guys from the Third Reich down there, either went into hiding or went into another South American country. We've dug up bunches of FBI documents. They all state the same thing. Mm-hmm. They knew he was down there, and some of them even listed where he was, but we weren't allowed to go get him.
You can see on the front cover that you're looking at, image number one, a picture, a photograph of the house in the background there. Hardly an R&R place for lots of SS people. It's basically a single-family home with servants and staff. That's all it was.
Right. With quite a few guest houses outside, too.
The house, nearby.
As you know, I think you know, I took that picture.
Yes, I do.
Okay. And it doesn't look quite so nice because it's been allowed to go to pot. After 2011, there was a volcano in Chile that erupted and just put volcanic ash all over everything. And the lawn is gone. It looks like the surface of the moon now.
Well, unfortunately, true, but it maybe somebody will bring it back.
I hope so.
It's certainly structurally sound. It just cosmetically doesn't look good anymore.
No.
All right. That's the book we want you to get. That's one of three. And once you read that book, you're going to read Don Angel's great disclosure. It's in there. It's all in the book. Hitler in Argentina. The truth of Hitler's escape from Berlin. Harry Cooper and I will be right back. Now, did you check your email? I just sent you an email.
No, but I will.
All right. Take a quick look.
Okay. This is a slow computer. It's older than dirt.
Yeah, it sounds like mine.
Almost as old as me.
Yeah.
No. Nope. Not yet.
Okay.
Probably out there being... Oh, wait. Yeah. Here it is. Okay. And... Aha! Good point.
I mean, maybe something tonight? A little something.
I think, well, first off, I'm too damn dumb to know how to program our computer that way. However, if your listener, Danny, would like, he can order through Shark Hunters. The normal price is, if you get it through us, is $25. But since he came up with this idea, if he orders through Shark Hunters headquarters, we'll, for Danny or for any of your listeners, $20, the same as our members get.
20% off, okay.
That's right.
But
you still have to pay the $7 shipping, unfortunately.
Sure.
No, it's $8 now, I'm sorry. Postage went up again. Jeez.
Of course.
You can't turn around without it going
No. All right.
Well, they can, Danny or any of your listeners can send us an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net or sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. And just say you heard about it on the Rents program, and it's $20 instead of the normal $25.
Wow, that's very nice. It's such an important book. It's a monumentally important book.
I'm happy to say, Jeff, it is selling like gangbusters.
Wow.
Because it is...
The truth.
The truth is the first one. It's the most accurate. all of these guys that come along later who think they know what they're talking about, they're putting in their books that Hitler escaped on board U-530. That's just absolutely nuts. In the first place, U-530, or the skipper of U-530, was a member of Shark Hunters, and we talked to him at length, and he swore on his honor as an officer. He had no passengers aboard. Secondly, that submarine was already 3 days out to sea before Hitler disappeared. So how did he get to it? Uh-huh. Third, Hitler was violently claustrophobic and seasick.
No way.
So I think this guy's going to spend 3 or 4 weeks in a stinky steel tube. It's just there for those guys to sell books. And we know how he got away. Take a look at the picture in the upper right-hand corner.
Yeah.
That's the Focke Wulf FW390. There were only three of them made. And they were numbered or named, whatever, V1, V2, and V3, which had nothing to do with the weapons. It's just what they named them. V3 never got finished. The war ended, and it was broken up either by the Germans, so they didn't leave anything behind, or by the Allies. V2 was 3 meters longer than V1, so it had a larger fuel capacity. It had about 7,000-mile range. And we learned just a couple of months ago that this plane that took Hitler to Uruguay, which was about the end of its legs, it had flown several flights to Japan and back. You know, how did they get to Japan, people will ask, you know, because Russia's in the way. No, they went over the top, over the polar route. And in our issue number 292, we had photos of the abandoned airstrip on the Japanese-held island, or the Japanese-owned island of Sakhalin, mm-hmm. which is now Russian, and a huge, huge mess of red 55-gallon fuel drums, but some of them, a small number of them, were white. And you look at them closely, and they had the swastika and the Kriegsmarine markings on it, the Navy markings. So that's there in that particular issue, and there were tunnels and bunkers all through that island. And there's in that issue, there's pictures of Russians now doing some research there. So this plane made it to Uruguay, and as you know from a previous show, we had a handwritten chart that our agent Pizarro had dug out of the files, a hand-drawn chart, and he sent to us. I went down there, and with my friend Martin, we went to Uruguay, to the little town of Paysandú, and damn if it wasn't exactly right. The roads, the buildings, the big meadow where the plane landed, it was exactly like it was shown on the chart.
Well, this the Ju-390 was a truly a remarkable plane. Hitler had ideas of using them to bomb New York, surprise raids over New York. They never made enough of them. They ran out of time. It was an enormous plane, and it had a range of 7,000 miles. There is also an ear witness to that plane landing. Am I correct?
Yeah, several.
Yeah. They heard it land. That's how he got there. It's an amazing story, and that plane is pictured on the cover of the book. So I'm glad, Danny, you're going to like this book a lot. There are two other books we should take a quick look at. The second book, second picture, Hitler and the Secret Alliance. All right, tell us about that briefly.
That shows how the foundation was laid for Hitler and thousands. We figure 3,000 to 4,000, but with their wives and kids, more than that. The foundation was laid for them to escape to South America, primarily Argentina. They didn't lay this foundation because all the Third Reich was going to run down there. They started this in 1905, long before there was ever a Nazi party. Argentina had given huge tracts of land to Europeans, primarily Germans and some Italians, and they had massive, huge estancias, farms, ranches. They also had the banks and in many areas of the electric companies. And they grew and they grew. And then when Hitler was coming to power, many of them were sending lots of money to him, as people send to their political choice. And so when World War II ended, there was a very patriotic German down there. Even today, 80% of Argentinians are Western European by birth, by native, whatever. So this tells how they were able to get down there. And then the next book, which just came out, Hitler's Spy Web in South America, it goes into depth on how they had a big spy web based, radiated out of Buenos Aires, but they had spy chiefs in all sorts of little towns in Argentina and in Paraguay, Chile, Brazil, not so much in Uruguay, because Uruguay was very pro-British, but it tells how the agents were coming and going, and the radio equipment was coming in, and money or precious metals were coming in to to keep bribing, especially the South American guys. And then, of course, once the Third Reich fell, Juan Perón suddenly got ultra wealthy from 1945, when he was just a poor colonel, to 1946, when he was very wealthy, had three mansions. We show pictures in the other book, Hitler and the Secret Alliance. We show photos of his three mansions and the homes that Mengele had and Bormann had in Buenos Aires, and the addresses and everything. And so Bormann had showed up on the scene with a ton of money and the numbers for the secret bank accounts. And so Perón sold them his protection. He became ultra wealthy out of that.
And if you don't really believe this, that's fine. But I'd also urge you and invite you to go to Rents News. Look on our little site search engine. You'll see it on the left-hand side. It's down below guests, actually. You can type in what you want. Type in Hitler photos after war. Hitler photos after the war. And you'll see photos of Adolf Hitler at the hotel, the Eden Hotel, in 1947, having lunch. Not a joke. It is the hotel. The owners of it are there, and the owners were not in Germany. This happened after the war. There's your proof. It's right there. Hitler photos after the war. Just type it in and you'll see them.
Yeah, those photos are also in our in our book. That's the Eichhorn family.
Right.
Eichhorn is a German word meaning acorn. And Ida Eichhorn, the wife, was especially supportive of Hitler in the early 30s and sent him lots and lots of money. Mm-hmm. And so when he got down to South America, he was headquartered at Inalco, which is in Patagonia, but he was up visiting them. And this was in the annex of the hotel, which is about 100 yards away. And I stayed there in 2016. An old place with the 16-foot ceilings and the 12-foot-high double doors and the claw-footed bathtubs.
Wow.
And, you know, it's kind of an eerie feeling knowing that he stayed in that very building.
Yeah, indeed. Well, yeah, it's even more eerie that you talk to people that heard that plane land. That to me is amazing. And the woman who told you...
All along that road, by the meadow where it landed, every quarter mile or so there was another farmhouse, because it had been a very prosperous German farming community once upon a time. Now it's all kind of beat down, kind of ghetto-ish, but all these old ladies are in there, and there's pictures of them in the book. Also on my website, sharkhunter.com, under previous tours, they heard the plane land late at night. And one lady, there's a picture of her in there, got a chuckle with her. She was wearing just a T-strap blouse top, whatever you call it, so she had bare arms. And she's sitting there saying, "I don't know, there were no Nazis here." And she's got three swastikas tattooed on her forearm.
Funniest thing. Yeah,
yeah,
there we go. All right, now let's get into our pictures here, because
the
next tour, give us the dates, Harry. And we want to thank Harry for staying up so darn late. It's 11:45 in Florida. Harry should be looking at the inside of his eyelids right now.
Yeah, I've been up since 3:15 this morning, working straight through. And my wife took our son to church this evening, and she came back, and I'm still here at the computer. She said, "I thought you were going to take a nap before you went on runs." I said, I got to get this done. I got something else I'm doing. Yeah. We got books coming out galore.
I don't know how you do it. It's I do know how you do it, because I do much the same thing. But
exactly.
It's rare that people have the work ethic and the creativity and the feeling of honor and responsibility to have people respect what you do. That's, you don't want to let them down, and you won't.
That's exactly the point. It's not so much, it's the honor and the work ethic and all that, but it's fun. It's not work. It's fun. I love writing. I put out a magazine. As you know, you get the magazine electronically, and anybody who wants a copy of it free, just send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net or sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com. Say you heard us on Rents, and we'll send you the current issue electronically for free.
Great publication. It's just a remarkable thing, what you've done.
Thank you.
Remarkable.
My 28th book just came out today.
Wow.
Which we'll highlight that later on.
Okay.
But it's just a lot of fun. Now, our tour, the one we're going to talk about tonight, is the Southern Redoubt Patrol, and it's the last 2 weeks in September.
Uh-huh.
Culminating actually in the first weekend of October. We have to make sure we get in Oktoberfest. I've been there so often, you know, it's kind of old hat to me, but to newcomers, it's just fantastic. It's the world's biggest beer party, but it's not just a beer party. All the various Munich breweries have a huge, big, monstrous tent, and they show off their beers. And each one has an oompa band trying to drown out the oompa bands all around it. It's just so much fun, but we'll get to that in a moment. You look at photo number 4. One of the places where we go, and we will go again, is an air museum, huge place. This is on the grounds of a World War I Bavarian Air Force flying school.
Wow, the old biplanes and triplanes.
Yes.
The Red Baron, okay.
Exactly. There was no German Air Force in World War I. This was the Bavarian Air Force. Each one of the counties or whatever you want, states inside of Germany had their own little fiefdom.
Right.
And this is a World War II aircraft. This is a beautifully maintained Heinkel 111 bomber.
Wow.
That's in that museum. Next to that, in photo 5, there's a BF-109, which was the king of the skies in the early part of the war.
Right. Great plane, a wonderful plane. Both sides had a remarkable aircraft. And that war was a war the likes of which will never be fought again. It was men and machines, no computers, none of that stuff. It was just one against the other. And
man versus man, right. After World War II ended, and I say this from experience because I wanted to be a fighter pilot in the Air Force, but this was later, and no fighter pilots ever saw the adversary through a spinning prop. They saw a little image on a computer screen that said fire, and you pushed the button and went home and figured the other guy didn't go home.
That's about it.
This museum covers a huge area. And like I say, it was on the, how did we get number 36 for the next one? That don't belong there. Another aircraft you'll see in that museum, photo 6, is the looking straight at it. and that's what they call the Smiling Shark. That's the ME-262 jet fighter that was like 100 miles an hour faster than the P-51 Mustang. And you see
untouchable, except when it was landing or taking off, unfortunately.
Right, it was vulnerable then, and they tried to have Focke Wulf FW-190s flying top cover. Didn't always work. One of our members had a P-51, and he shot down the first two jet fighters in that were on their way into combat. They were taking off, and he caught them as they were taking off. Flamed both the squadron leader and the second in command. But you're looking at the in the center. That's the 37 millimeter cannon, and the four 20 millimeter cannons around it.
The 37 it was fired in kind of a rhythmic cadence, like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah,
it wasn't like a machine gun. It was more of a...
Not quite as fast as a machine gun, that's correct, yeah. You didn't have to hit too many times with a 37 millimeter with the high explosive. All you got to do is hit one of the struts inside the airplane with that high explosive, and that's the ball game for your target.
Right. Well, that's a remarkable plane, and had Hitler under... Remember, Adolf Hitler was a veteran, a hero of World War One. He was a messenger, a runner, risked his life.
Career.
Very few people survived in that position for long. He did. He was World War One in his orientation. He didn't understand the concept of air superiority. And Adolf Galland, the general of the... You know the whole story. I'm just talking in front of Harry here. Galland begged Hitler to give him this plane as an air superiority fighter. Hitler wanted to make it into a bomber. He could fly over Britain unmolested, drop bombs, and fly home. And Galland, at one point, actually quit as head of fighter forces because he could not get this plane. Hitler blew 2 years on turning this plane into a bomber when he should have been turning it into an air superiority fighter, and training and teaching and equipping the Luftwaffe with these jets. They could have swept the skies clean, but they lost 2 years or thereabouts, and Galland finally got his way, but it was too late.
Too little, too late. Yeah, Galland was a member of Shark Hunters. We wrote back and forth, and never met him, although I met a lot of the other veterans, but never met Galland. And then he unfortunately died under the knife while doing surgery.
That's called getting cheated. I mean, think about the guy. I told you the story, I think. He came to speak, and he was, I don't know, a couple hundred miles away from me. I couldn't make it. I regret that to this day. But I sent two or three video recordings, videotapes, Disney videotapes of Mickey Mouse cartoons down there.
Yeah.
And they gave him these videotapes, and he went back to Germany with them, and his wife wrote a very nice letter saying how much he loved them and enjoyed them, because he really was a Disney Mickey Mouse fan. He had Mickey Mouse on the side of his 109 painted.
Right. And Mickey Mouse in one hand had a six-shooter, and in the other hand a cigar.
I think
either that or he's smoking a cigar, because Galland smoked cigars too.
Yeah, amazing little story. But I was glad to have been able to bring him that kind of fun in his later years.
And after the war, he was one of the three German super aces, super top pilots that went down to Argentina to rebuild their air force. Galland was one, Rudel was another, and Baumbach from the bomber squadron was the third.
It's amazing stuff, all of it. All right, next picture.
Go to number seven, the thing that looks like a big aardvark.
Second row, number one on the left.
Yeah, I guess that's the one. Yeah, the green thing that looks like an aardvark. That was a homemade airplane made by a guy in East Berlin. He was going to fly his family over the wall to safety in West Berlin, but they all got arrested the day before they were going to take off. And what was their crime? They were trying to leave Berlin. Hell of a note. You get thrown in jail if you want to leave town.
That was a glider, wasn't it?
It looked like a glider, but on the far side. Now, where is it? It had a propeller on it.
Probably in the front.
Side, I think. Yeah, just not on the front, but on the back of one of the wings. It was kind of a Mickey Duck looking outfit. I don't know how he thought it was going to get away.
One engine on one side.
Yeah, yep, yep, yep.
Wow.
Well, you could counterbalance with the rudder.
What a story.
Yeah, he got caught. I don't know whatever happened to him.
Sad. Sad. All right, hold on a minute. We will come right back with more and Harry Cooper. And don't forget, coming up this fall, you have a chance to go see all of these things and much more.